The future of farming our food and fibre requires open minds and open hearts. That's why you're listening to Sarah's Country.
Now, agriculture has been in the spotlight, of course, under the net zero carbon debate, contributing 48% of New Zealand's greenhouse gases. The energy sector sits a close second, though, at 41% of total emissions, but has yet to receive the same pressure to mitigate its emissions. Of course, we have certainly seen a bit of a change of understanding there under the lockdown. Canterbury farmer and Nuffield scholar Cam Henderson believes the two sectors should work together more closely to collectively lower emissions. So Cam spoke this week in an up-and-coming story with Richard Rennie for Farmers Weekly and joins us now. Evening, Cam.
Good evening, Sarah.
Firstly, can you give us a little bit of a background on your farming career, where you are in mid-Canterbury, and what led you to this passion around this particular topic, to travel, of course, the world with your Nuffield scholarship?
Yeah, sure. I've been in Canterbury, in North Canterbury, based just outside of Oxford, about 40 minutes inland from Christchurch. Been here for about 10 years. We converted the dairy farm from an old sheep station, and prior to that, I was born and bred in the Waikato, dairy import from the North Island, so like many of us down here. So I guess Canterbury's been a bit of a hotbed for environmental impacts for a while, mostly the nutrients, but I guess there's been a gradual drift into the greenhouse gas issue as well, which has seen a lot more attention over the last few years. And I guess I saw farmers' focus had been firmly fixed on the nutrient side of things and thought, well, actually this greenhouse gas issue could be something that sneaks up on us and really wasn't getting enough attention. So I wanted to look at what options were available overseas for mitigation, and it actually took it a lot further than what I first expected. And instead of just mitigating options on farm, to actually helping other sectors mitigate their options as well, so whether there can be a win-win situation out of this. So that's really where the topic came from.
Interesting. So I'm just going to show anaerobic digesters capable of turning effluent into biogas is what you've been looking into. And of course, electricity generating solar arrays, some of the options you've visited during your study. Can you explain how in depth the technology is around the world and where New Zealand can catch up on? Or is this a new space?
The technology, the basis of the technology has been around for a while and has actually got a strong history of being tested in New Zealand. But like a lot of climate technology, it's developing pretty quickly. And New Zealand's technology is falling behind what's going on overseas. So it's not only anaerobic digesters, which take any sort of biomass that can be manure, it can be stubble from crops, it can be any sort of waste biological product, and turn it into a gas that can either be burnt or used like a natural gas in any other natural gas type system. There's solar power, wind power, on-farm hydro. A lot of these options have been used on small scale around the world. So the technology all exists. There's not really any need for any new innovation in this space. What the key factor is internationally that we don't have here in New Zealand is the policy and incentive to really encourage farmers to take up some of these activities.
Yeah, and you say here that it's around the carbon prices and carbon storage schemes where we've got the things out of whack to give that incentive. Have you got any sort of comparisons around the incentive to plant out that valuable farmland and forestry versus how this can be an incentive?
Yeah, sure. I guess probably the one big example wasn't so much in forestry, it was in solar panels. Over in California, farmers there can install solar panels and generate electricity throughout the year. And then they get the full retail price of that solar power for the entire year, so long as their demand and their supply match from an annual basis. So in New Zealand, when we have a solar panel on the house, we really only get the economic incentive to use that power as it's being generated, whereas internationally, yeah, there are policies that just encourage farmers or any users of solar panels to generate power year-round. It adds quite a lot to the economics of some of these scenarios when you can generate your power at 24 cents a kilowatt hour versus what we can get here in New Zealand at 7 cents a kilowatt hour.
So, Cam, I understand that you have been harvesting solar to power your family farming dairy shed. Of course, you've got those massive wintering barns, which would be fantastic for solar and putting it into the grid. My concern, though, where a lot of this has fallen down, is the calculations and the accounting systems around this are just too complicated. It's just easier to tax on stock units.
It is. And I think for most farmers, there is a lot of technology in the background there that most of us just don't understand. I had no idea about it when the solar panels were first installed. I needed a lot of support to do it. But there aren't really many vendors in New Zealand that are specialising in this type of technology. And there again, they don't really have the policy to back them up to warrant putting together some of these really, really neat programs and installation packages for farmers. So I think it's there again. It came out of one of the recommendations was to develop better systems for farmers to be able to install, rather than just throw the technology at them and say, here, make what you can of it, to actually design some systems that work well for farms in different parts of the country.
It is a real shame that, of course, we don't have the physical field days where we can see these things in action. Now, this anaerobic digester, Lorna Hum has said that she saw a really good one in action in Scotland and that it's very much a part of our future. What are some of the barriers and who do we need to lobby to be able to encourage the incentives around this type of energy, circular energy, basically?
It does come down to price. That anaerobic digesters are quite expensive to install and to run. And internationally, particularly for dairy systems, they generate a lot more manure because they house their animals year-round. Can capture all that manure and feed it directly into the digesters. So we simply just don't generate on a per farm basis enough effluent for a lot of these systems to work. But there's quite a few being built in the likes of California and Ireland that are using other feedstocks as well. So I mentioned earlier, crop stubble, you can throw in old silage, straw, even some being developed to throw old willows and trees into as well. So really anything biological you could throw in. And there's a biodigester in Germany on a farm where they're generating enough gas that they've converted a tractor to run on the biomethane generated by the anaerobic digester. So the farm is becoming more circular in terms of its energy use. So the technology there, again, all exists. We just haven't developed the systems that work well here in New Zealand yet.
Imagine that when we have that major marketing incentive to be not only carbon neutral, but circular in our waste systems as well. There's just so many layers to that. So, Cam, thank you so much for taking a year out of your life to be able to bring this insight through your Nuffield Scholarship. And, of course, we need to give a shout out. You will have some webinars coming up shortly that people can get on and watch and learn more about your report.
Yep, that's correct. Yes, it's a little bit more detail and I can talk through some more of the scenarios and what I saw while I was travelling for the year.
So go to ruralleaders.co.nz to subscribe to those webinars that were announced out actually today in terms of date. Cam, before I let you go, a number of parents saying they're really looking forward to their kids going back to school. That's their level two thing. What is yours?
Well, actually, my first child was born on the first day of lockdown. So she has yet to meet a large chunk of the family. So the first thing we did once we heard level two was coming up was book some flights home to my family in the Waikato. So little Annie gets to meet her grandparents and all the family on my side of the family. So that's something really special that we can look forward to.
That is absolutely beautiful. Thank you so much and congratulations on everybody listening and watching to be able to bring a beautiful girl under lockdown. I've also got some friends I can't wait to give a wee cuddle to their little one as well. That's Cam Henderson, the Nuffield Scholar there on Sirius Country. You've been listening to an extended feature on Sirius Country. Now make sure if you haven't downloaded the Sirius Country mobile app on Apple or Android to do that today. Otherwise, feel free to recommend any guests or any topics that you'd like on the show. You can contact us on all of my social media, Sarah Perriam on social media, or send me an email, Sarah with an H at Perriam, PERRIAM, media.com.